Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. The annual CIPD IRN private sector report has recently been released and captures changing pay and employment trends as well as the drivers of change in the labour market in Ireland. It's always an interesting and useful piece of research, and this year is no different, with some fantastic insights into the world of work here in Ireland. And to share some of these insights and speak to us today, we're delighted to be joined by Mary Connaughton, Director at CIPD Ireland. Thanks for joining us, Mary. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Good to be with you, Owen and Mary.
Brilliant stuff. Looking forward to the chat. And as always, we're joined by our very own Mary Cullen, Founder and Managing Director here at Insight HR. How are you, Mary?
I'm great, thanks, Owen. Very wet and dreary day out there today, but always a pleasure to have you with us, Mary.
That's it. And just for our listeners as well, if I have to use our surnames, you'll know why. There's two Marys here, so I might just use the surnames if that's all right with everyone. Brilliant. So look, I'll jump right in. So I suppose Mary Connaughton, just from a CIPD perspective, Mary, pay increases, that's always kind of a headline item, and it's something I know we've spoken about on our podcast a lot as well. Can you talk to us about some of the findings in this regard, Mary, when it comes to pay increases and that kind of stuff?
Okay, I think what came through from our research this year, Owen, was that when we look at the 2023 trends, 73% of the organisations in the survey had given a pay increase last year, and the average pay increase was 4.38%. Good in terms of the marketplace. When we talk about 2024, because people are always more interested in what might be coming in the months ahead, 52% said they were planning to give pay increases, but then there was a third that hadn't yet made the decision. So we collected this data back in January and they hadn't yet made the decision. And that would be a common trend in this survey. And the planned increase at that point was 4.11, which is looking like it's going to be ahead of inflation. So inflation, the most recent projection for inflation from the central bank for March was for 2% this year. So it could mean they're actually going to get back to a situation where pay increases are actually giving people more money in their pocket, because we know pay increases have slipped behind and the cost of living rises over the past couple of years. And the SRI are also making a projection about that for the future. Now, we do find a bit of variation in it, like trade union organisations are likely to get 3.94 this year, which is slightly less, but it's like the payoff is that they end up being in a pay agreement which might be for 2 years, so they have a bit more stability and have negotiated a slightly lower pay increase, or it works out lower than the market trend. But there are often other benefits thrown into those agreements as well. So that's the overall response. I think what's really come through is how employee retention was one of the drivers for pay. So when companies are looking at their pay policy, how they retain employees is really what's making a difference. And they recognise that they have to respond to the pay pressures that they're under. But at the same time, we know that company capacity to pay is very important. So when you ask about some of the parameters around and the conditions at which companies will make payments this year, the capacity to pay, the company performance is important. Quite a number also mention the individual performance, where they have performance-related pay, but really it's not just an automatic assumption that everyone is going to get that 4% pay increase. Really, companies have to be able to show that they have the capacity to be able to pay that.
Absolutely. And just on that performance-related pay piece, Mary, the bonuses, and just again, it'd be remiss not to mention the gender pay gap, given how active yourself and CIPD were in that in the recent years. I found one of the findings in there mentioning that bonuses overall might be down a little, which sounds bad, but I mean, Mary, there probably is an effect on the gender pay gap there in a positive way. Is there? What's the thoughts there?
Yeah. So we don't track the level of bonuses because they vary so much. What we do track is the number who plan to pay a bonus. So this year, 64% said they were planning to pay a bonus. And that's down from 74% last year. And I know if we go back a year or two, it actually did hit 80% 1 year. So definitely there is a stepping back in terms of bonuses for 2024. And yes, one of the questions we had is to whether or not that is linked to the gender pay gap, because now that we're in sort of we've gone through the second year of reports, we've known when you look at the gender pay gap reports that more males get higher bonuses than females. So now, because all the information is compiled in one place, we don't have a national figure. But overall, when we go through quite a number of reports, we see that men are more likely to receive bigger bonuses than females. And sometimes that's just related to the work pattern and the part-time work and that more females do. But even so, you know, one of the ways that you can minimize that bonus payment is to reduce the number of people that get bonuses and try and balance out the bonus payments between males and females. And that often means looking at it for different roles. But yeah, and we have seen in some of the reports this year that we looked at that the drop, there was a drop in bonus and the bonus gender pay gap, which is good to see. As some organisations, it was very high.
Definitely. And look, a lot in this service was great to, I suppose, touch on a few aspects of that. We will go into a bit more detail on all the other aspects as well. I suppose, Mary Colin, then just, I suppose, from the inside HR perspective, Mary, and I know a lot of our frequent listeners will have heard us speaking about a lot of these legislative updates that have happened in the past year. And I see in the CIPD survey, 63% of respondents said that the protected disclosure legislation will have little or no impact. 40% of respondents reported feeling a high impact from implementing obligations under the Sick Leave Act. A couple of bits in there like that. So I suppose, Mary Colin, there's still certainly some challenges kind of being faced by companies trying to implement, understand everything, isn't it? And it was interesting to see that come out in the survey.
Yeah, very interesting. I think, you know, sometimes it's a case of what people don't really understand in terms of the impact of any legislation. And sometimes it takes, you know, a year for this these things to wash through to the WRC into the first level of case law that's out there. And certainly we were talking to Jennifer Cashman last week, and she was talking about the fact that, you know, we're going to see case law about all of these things maybe next year, and that will focus the minds again. But, you know, certainly when I'm talking to HR practitioners out there, irrespective of the size of their departments, I think HR people are struggling to keep up to date with the sheer volume of change that has come about. You know, it's interesting when people say that, you know, the protected disclosures legislation might have a little impact, and yet we're starting to see that more and more people are raising protected disclosures as part of complaints where traditionally they may have raised a grievance instead. And there's an added layer of complexity now for employers, HR teams, when they're investigating those kind of matters. So there are complexities around them. And I think until someone experiences them, they may well think that this won't really have an impact on us. But there are certain things that you must do by law to ensure you're compliant with that piece of legislation. And I think really what I would say to HR teams, it's really important that you do get to updating your policies and procedures, you know, understanding what has changed out there and how it impacts, not just against a single policy, but it may have an impact on multiple policies across the business. And I think it's important that that review is done every year, where you're looking and seeing what has changed, what do I need to do, what time frame do I have to implement these changes, and also listening out for what's coming up next, because of course there's always things coming up next. So it's a real challenging time. I have found the last 5 years, even as professionals who spend our time poring over this, even for us, things just creep in just before Christmas, when everybody's winding down and you're not thinking about it so much, and yet you're expected to be up to speed and on the ball with it. So I do think it's important to keep an eye on those things. And really interesting findings from the survey. I don't know if you had a view on that, Mary, yourself.
Similar to yourself, Mary, we think that, particularly on the protected disclosures, is that people don't appreciate the impact it can have, most likely because they haven't yet had to deal with the case. But in terms of being able then to manage a case, it is important that really process is followed and, you know, the right principles and investigation is carried out. So we know when people face one, they can be a bit taken aback by it. But yet, I think in general, if people haven't been there, they haven't had to deal with it. I mean, we did an analysis of the number of pieces of legislation, and there must have been nearly 10 different changes coming in December and January. Now, that's a phenomenal amount in a short space of time, and like not always pre-announced. So, you know, you have the whole thing of even things like permits all of a sudden changes, you know, the week before Christmas, you know, and whereas things like the national minimum wage and the sick pay had been flagged. So those ones we had known about. But then you have sort of things like gender pay gap and protected disclosures, and even parents' leave was in the original legislation that it was going to increase. So it just feels like it's an ongoing cycle of change. And it is more difficult for people to keep up with and to be 100% compliant all the time. I mean, it's just as well, so many of our policies are now online that we can update a page here and a page there, because if we were trying to go through handbooks, we'd never get them finished, you know. So there's a lot of change out there, and it is leading to pressure too. We are picking up that there are pressure points within the profession with the level of busyness and activity that they're having to cope with.
Yeah, and I think also you're seeing some HR teams cut too. So, you know, less people and actually a greater volume of work. And I know the pressure that HR people are under when they know they're not getting to these things, that they just don't have the time because there are so many other projects, or, you know, maybe projects that are more important to the CEO and the leadership team than the compliance piece, but yet the compliance piece is always there and something that, you know, is owned typically by the HR function, and the challenge is keeping on top of it, you know, and not finding yourself in that tricky position, because when you end up with the case in front of you, that's when you're running to your employment law solicitors and you're running to the likes of us and trying to grapple and find out what I should have done, and operating from the back foot, and that's never a comfortable position to be in for a HR person or for an employer.
Definitely. And I suppose, Mary Connor, just to layer in another thing on top of this for HR people, I mean, benefits is something that I know featured heavily in the survey. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the results have shown on that side, I suppose, from a non-pay perspective?
Right. Well, we know that our survey profile, based on the size and the sector, does tend to be organisations that have things like pension contributions, sick leave top-up. So they would be relatively standard in our audience, and they're visible again this year. It's good to see the use of the tax-free vouchers increase. So since the government upped the amount to €1,000, they've certainly got a lot more publicity and certainly a lot more in use. And we're still seeing, high levels of top-up around maternity leave and paternity benefit. I think the really interesting thing is, and we probably don't try and link them in terms of financial benefits, is the way new policies are coming in to support employees. So we're definitely seeing that there's much more activity around those policies in terms of, domestic abuse policy, which of course was driven by legislation, but we're also seeing menopause policies and infertility policies. So they're all improving sort of the quality of working life and the well-being of individuals. And interestingly, we did ask, but it wasn't one of the top ones, was we are starting to see a focus come through on men's health as well, because traditionally the areas that have been focused on have been looking at women's health. And now really there's also a need to just have a men's health strategy to be conscious of what ways do men need support. And often that is often maybe more in terms of mental health and talking about their issues and putting attention on their health. Whereas with women, it's great to see the support around fertility, which of course applies to potential fathers as well, and around the menopause. So they're very clearly ways in which companies are trying to improve, in a sense, the benefits of individuals, but at the same time, they're not all about about pay. And we do see that these are things that now people are more likely to ask for when they are trying to recruit, and they are becoming an important part of the employer brand.
Without a doubt, Mary. I think it's really interesting, though, from an employee perspective, and I hear both sides, but, you know, I've heard quite a few complaints about people about their bonuses, you know, not getting the bonuses that they expected this year that they would have traditionally got, not really understanding why, because of the, I suppose, pressures that they may be under themselves financially. And it's interesting to see that the introduction of these policies is very welcome, and it's fantastic to see the kind of focus that has been there, in particular on women's health, because for so long, and I'm sure you'll agree, both of us started our careers with, you know, low maternity leave benefits and low concern from an employer perspective around our general caring responsibilities, whatever they might have been. So it is wonderful to see much more focus on all of these areas. But I think always from a HR perspective, an employer perspective, we do need to be mindful about the base pay elements and those bonus payments that people feel is part of what they have learned to bank on over time and have built into their lives. So it's just important when you're thinking about your retention strategies to look at, well, if you have made a business decision or a commercial decision from a gender pay gap reporting perspective around bonuses, that you're really thinking about, well, what's the impact here for the employees and what else do we need to look at? But I love to see these policies coming in, and I just, you know, I'm so thankful for, say, my own daughter who's in her 30s with two children, that, you know, her working life is easier than mine at the same point when I had small children.
Yeah, and I suppose, Mary, from a inside HR perspective then, I mean, people focus policies is something that I think a lot of our frequent listeners will have heard us talking about, but it's something that a lot of people have come to us for support. And as well, Mary, a lot of the policies we just mentioned there, they seem to be a challenge to implement those, to craft them, and as well get them right within the market as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's important that you consider your demographic, isn't it? You know, who are you speaking to with your policies, and what's important to those people? You know, we have heard from other podcast guests that we've had on over this year and last year, some really innovative things that they're doing around family caring responsibilities, around women's health, around men's health, like Mary just mentioned. And again, I always say to people, it's about looking at what you can do, the kind of budget you have, the kind of demographic you have in terms of introducing these policies, and, you know, how does it feed into your attraction and your retention policies. I have certainly noticed now that when people come to interview, they're interviewing as much as they're being interviewed. And what they're interviewing about is what kind of supports you have in place around remote and flexible working, around women's health, around men's health, around family caring responsibilities. And while our legislation supports, you know, us in many ways now in terms of putting in place these policies, I still think it's come at such a pace that organizations haven't really had a chance to catch up and really think about what it is they want to do in each of these areas and how they're going to support people, particularly, say, when it comes to something like domestic violence leave. Some people are really well ahead of the passing. You'll see that with organisations like Bank of Ireland, who came out in advance of the legislation with quite robust policies, and others still not quite sure what to do when the issue arises, still not having trained the line management. You know, a lot of managers talk about the pressures that they're under. They're now meant to discuss a whole range of topics with employees, but what training is there for them to do that? And what is the employee experience when they approach their manager with what might be quite a significant issue for them? What is that actual lived experience of the employee? So remember, it's not just the policy. The policy must come to life. And the way you bring the policy to life is through awareness campaigns, through training of your line management, through creating opportunity for open discussion around these kind of areas. You know, we've had some really interesting guests talk about how they have done that in their organizations. But again, I think a lot of it comes down to the size, the sophistication, the resources you have within your organization, how you use employee resource groups, if you have employee resource groups, and all of those kind of things. But I think irrespective of size, there are things that you can do in the organization on all of these points, but you kind of have to figure out where to start and what's important for your organization. You might not be able to reach to everything.
Exactly. And it seems like, Mary Connerton, then from the CIPD perspective, you might correct me if I'm wrong here, but the undercurrent seems to be a lot around that retention piece and the challenges there. Would you agree, Mary, that that's something that's still on the CIPD desk when you're hearing from people in the profession, that retention is kind of one of those things that's just not gone away yet as a challenge?
No, it's definitely still a challenge there. And I suppose it's when you talk about skill shortages, we know that this year, like the last couple of years, companies are facing, you know, significant skill challenges and are struggling to either hold on to those key skills or find them in the marketplace. So yes, retention is key. And we've also know that things like flexible working is very central to retention strategies. And the other really high one is upskilling people, both from the organisation perspective, to have the people in their roles who have the right skills for the job, but also from individuals, because if individuals aren't getting some level of upskilling, their skills can be slipping behind because the pace of change is absolutely so high. I mean, we haven't yet published our HR practices survey. We'll do that next month, but it has like talent management, and we define that around recruitment, retention, and development is the top priority. And so despite all the changes with technology, sustainability, the legislation, and the resourcing issue is still a top one. And in this particular survey, you know, we can see how, you know, one of the issues is dealing with that demand for flexible working. And of course, since March, we now have the legal entitlement to request flexible remote working come in, which further complicates the field. And housing, we know, is another issue. So in terms of recruitment, you know, housing and location are central facets of people knowing that they can find somewhere to live near where they work. And, you know, it drives requests for remote working because it means they can live further away and maybe at less cost to themselves. So all those factors, you know, are all sort of part of the jigsaw of trying to attract people, retain them, and build that employee experience so people feel that they can contribute to their best. And I suppose that, like Mary was talking about, the various different benefits and ways employees are supported now. and the whole approach to remote and hybrid working has added to that, or maybe enabled that, because we spent some time in lockdown when we had to get used to, you know, people working in a different style, people, you know, not being face to face, accepting that people might start and finish at different times. And that brought in the need to manage that level of flexibility. Now, our HR practice survey is telling us that only half of managers have been trained to support that. So there is a gap in managers and how they manage it. But that layer of flexibility, or the fact that I can be at home some days and in work other days and maybe start earlier or finish later as I choose, is helping those things like, you know, domestic abuse leave where I need time out, or, you know, even menopause when I personally need, you know, fresh air or whatever my need is. So that different way of working is really helped open the door to improve the employee experience. And now, as Mary was saying, it's what employees expect. So employees now come in with their own list of what they're looking for, and you need to have the right answers, or they won't be accepting an offer.
That's it. And I suppose before we jump to that final question, then, of kind of looking ahead to the year ahead, that I'll ask both of you, I might just come back, Mary, on your point there around the housing crisis from a CIPD perspective. I suppose me saying that I was glad to see it included sounds a bit strange, because it's not something you want to see affecting the profession or the employment market. But can you talk to us just a little bit more about how the housing crisis was kind of referenced in the survey, the effect it's having?
Well, no, certainly we asked how was it impacting, and I suppose what came through was it is impacting with that demand for hybrid and remote working, so people can move away from a more expensive employment centre and not have the commute costs. It has put pressure on pay and benefits, because as rents have gone up, that has meant it's costing people more to live, and then to if there's premium locations that they're expected to live in, that's having an impact. And then, you know, in recruiting, people are being selective around that. Now, at one level, you could say, if you went back 5 years, somebody living in Cork might never have applied for a job in Dublin. So now they can apply and they can have the conversation about whether or not it's doable and how much of it might be needed on site and what flexibility there is. But certainly it is playing in. We know, we hear regularly examples of companies having to step in and sort out housing issues for individuals. So we know of some employers who have, you know, organized for certain houses to be available for their employees. We know other places where somebody in HR is compiling, you know, reaching out to all employees to say, have you a spare room? Have you somewhere you can rent? And so a sort of another service angle from HR in terms of actually supporting new employees to try to resolve those issues. So much more, I suppose, of a social care agenda has come in because of it. But at the same time, I would say it was probably more to the forefront 12, 18 months ago than it is now. So it has dipped slightly in terms of the pressure point. Now, whether we've all just accepted it, or I'm not saying it's improved at all, but it's like we have found ways around it. But certainly it is there, and employees are now looking particularly to flexible and remote working to be able to reduce those costs and reduce commute costs and commute time.
Definitely, and I'm glad we could cover it, because it is quite an active social issue. So it's, and one that I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be thinking, I'm glad they mentioned that, because they're feeling it too. So 100%, so thanks for that, Mary. I suppose then, kind of final question, I'll come to both of you for this one, but I'll come to yourself, Mary Cullen, for this one. I suppose kind of looking ahead then to next year, I suppose from the survey, and I suppose from your own thoughts, Mary, from our Inside HR experience too, what should people be kind of focusing on this year? I know it's a bit of a blue sky question, but anything jumping out, do you think, right, there are particular challenges that I suppose should be on the list of HR people this year?
Gosh, where to start, Owen? There's so many things on the HR to-do list, and there always aren't there. Policy and procedure update, 100%. So much has changed. If you haven't looked at your policies and procedures in 2024, you're already out of date. So that would be number one, I would say. Focus on it, get it done, you know, and bring yourself into full compliance, because that's important. So that would be number one. You know, I think it's really interesting to hear about housing, Mary, because I don't know how many job offers I've seen turned down because people make the decision that they, A, either can't get accommodation, the commute is too much, there's not enough flexibility in start times and finish times, or there's a real push on being in the office maybe 3 days a week, which is a change, I think, from last year when there was much more flexibility, I think, in the marketplace in general. So I do think a stance on your remote and flexible working practices needs to be taken. And look, if you're the kind of organization that decides I want everybody in office 5 days a week, that's fine, but there will be both attraction and retention difficulties. Likewise, if you're pushing for people to be in office for more than they want to be, yes, of course they're going to come back. And we've discussed this before. Of course they're going to come back because it's their job and it supports their livelihood. But people vote with their feet, and that doesn't mean that they're not out there in the marketplace looking for alternatives. I know when we advertise ourselves remote HR jobs, we get hundreds of applications. I haven't seen that in years in HR, where you get hundreds of applications. Why? Because the flexibility suits people and they like it and they want it. So people look out for these opportunities, and those who are offering them, I guess, have a bit of an advantage out there. So again, it's what's your stance? How do you influence upwards to, if you're having real, really significant attraction and retention issues? Because it is going to be your core policies. It is going to be your core pay. It is going to be your stance on things like bonuses. And these things affect every year in HR. We know once the news of promotions and bonuses and pay increases go out, you know, certain people are going to be unhappy. That's just part and parcel of working in HR. But depending on how unhappy, how big a problem do we have in HR? So let's be clear what our stance is. Make sure that you're influencing upwards, and that if you have these kind of concerns, that you're communicating them in a really robust way to the senior team so they understand them. Because it does come back on you in HR eventually if you can't attract nor retain, because people, when the work isn't getting done at the ground level, people look around to see, well, whose fault is this? Why are we so slow in our talent acquisition? Why aren't we able to retain? Why can't we do more around pay? And, you know, trying to deal with individual requests as someone's about to walk out the door and trying then to up their salary, you know, it's rarely an effective strategy. And it tends, you know, take so long for people psychologically to disconnect from their job and to make the decision to go out there on the marketplace and go through all that hassle. It is hassle, you know. Really, you may have lost someone well before you even come back with that counteroffer. And even if you do come back with that counteroffer, is it going to be enough to keep people satisfied in the longer term? So a real strategic approach needs to be taken. From that perspective, don't forget well-being, don't forget staying cutting edge. I don't care the size of your budget, you can still be smart and creative about what you're doing. You don't need to follow the same as everybody else. You need to look at what your people need and want and how you might be able to support that. So a bit of blue sky thinking is always smart, particularly when you're competing in a tight marketplace. You know, it's one of those age-old things. If you do the same as all the big players, you know, you might be able to compete anyway because they're still offering higher pay, greater bonuses, more benefits. So it's blue sky thinking helps a lot if you're, you know, a smaller organization, a smaller HR department. So to be creative if you can be.
Mm. Definitely. I suppose kind of similar question to yourself then, Mary Connaughton. I know it's a tough question, but I suppose the CIPD experience and that under under the belt, what would be your kind of key focus areas for HR people to look at for the rest of the year?
Well, I think, I mean, Mary's picked up on lots of the central points. I just build on that and saying one of the things that we know companies are struggling with is some of that big picture about what is their culture, and particular with flexible and remote working, like, and for new employees coming in, not being on site as much and not getting a sense of, like, why am I here? What are we about? How do we get things done? How do I network with the right people? How do I influence up? So certainly culture is coming through as one of the areas that companies have realized they do need to kind of do a reset on, and invest more in it, and identify when people need to be on site as part of that and what they're coming on site for. So key culture initiatives are key development initiatives that we're now seeing. Some of them are sort of, they're on site, but they're on site for a purpose. It's not just, well, you have to be in Tuesday or Friday. It's like you have to be in for this particular development program. So there's greater clarity, I think, coming in terms of how do we use hybrid to work for both the individuals and for the organization, not that it's just sitting out there and happening without any control over. So there's much more investigation of that happening. But I think in terms of the trends, certainly understanding that flexible and hybrid working and getting it to work for everybody is important. And as Mary is saying, like, that's all contributing to retention and attraction. And, you know, it's part of the employee experience. So this is what the employee experience, and so much boils down to, once you have people, what is that experience? What's it looking like? What's it feeling like? But use also taking opportunities to use the employee voice in that. So not always be have the HR team come up the solutions, but actually put tools and resource groups and surveys in place to actually get the employee voice into that experience. There is certainly pressure on pay. So the cost of living, you know, where people live is certainly putting pressure on pay. So organisations still need to be doing that and mindful. And that means they're operating in a very competitive environment because, you know, if their staff costs are going to go up somewhere or other, that increased revenue has to come from somewhere. And I think there's just to touch on technology, because technology has certainly leapfrog forward in the last 12 months in terms of what people know about things like AI and ChatGPT and Copilot and all those things. What's there? What should be being used? How can we be more efficient? So there's now more of that that HR has to work out for HR in terms of its own efficiency, its own effectiveness, its own capacity to self-service and personalize. It also has to be the guardian of how it gets used in the organization in terms of policies, guidance, what's happening around copyright, how should it be used at an employee level. And then also around making sure, you know, people-centric decisions are made around how it does get used. What are the job implications? What upskilling is happening internally so that it's not that, you know, you look at 10 people and you say their 10 jobs are going to go, but you have to look at the tasks and say, actually, there's some of those tasks could be automated. And how then do we reshape those roles so that people are contributing more and doing more of the added value work while we're automating that? And there's more expectation on employers that they will be doing this because it's now what employees are expecting. And if they've been in one company where they've seen the journey started, they go into the next place and they expect to see it. So it's adding quite an extra layer of work and, you know, forcing, you know, we're hearing of big digital transformation projects. It's not just about AI that people talk about, but actually it's digital transformation. How do we use technology to transform the organization for the benefit of the employees and for the benefit of our customers and our bottom line? So yeah, some big questions for people to face for the year ahead.
Definitely a lot to think about, but luckily a lot of great insights from not just the survey, but from that chat. So thank you to both the Marys for a very practical, useful, insightful discussion. I'm sure a lot of people have had the notepads out there taking some notes on that. So thank you to everyone for listening too. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. If you are enjoying these episodes, do please feel free to share them with colleagues, friends, and family. And even better, if you can leave us a review on whatever platform you're on, we'd really appreciate that too. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at InsideHR. HRRoomPodcast.ie. Thank you, Mary Connaughton, and thank you, Mary Cullen.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Owen, and thanks, Mary.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.